The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up this week, we'll hear how BBC Local Radio is coping with and covering the coronavirus crisis. Chris Burns is on to tell us about some of the things they've been doing across the 39 stations in England. And she'll tell us why they've standardised their schedules across the network as well. And in David Lloyd's Radio Moments later, commercial radio arrives in Wolverhampton and poetically on the Isle of Wight. BBC Local Radio goes hyperlocal and memories of the Radiophonic Workshop.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassoy.
First, though, let's chat to Radio Today's founder and editor, Roy Martin, back on the show after a week off last week. How's your lockdown going, Roy?
You know what? It's going all right. It's going fine. I'm not one of these that have got absolutely nothing to do, and I'm going through the odd job list. Anybody with a family will know there's more work to be done during these times of lockdown. But yeah, it's going good. I'm safe. I'm fit and well. I don't know about fit, but I'm certainly well. And it's all good. It's all good and still business as usual at this end. How about you?
Exactly. Yeah, I seem to have been on Zoom more than any other thing on my computer with various kind of online meetings or quizzes or all sorts of things. We did the radio quiz as well last week, didn't we? The that Sam Bailey and Stephanie Hurst and Kate Cocker put together.
Yeah, that was really good. So thank you to them. It was a good experience once it eventually got going with the usual Zoom problems. But a couple of nights after, one of my non-radio friends said, how about a virtual pub tonight? I was like, do you know what? I'm done. I'm done with Zoom. Let's just not bother. I'll go to bed early instead.
Yeah.
So, yeah, enough Zoom already.
And a lot of the music artists are putting duets and things out. You might have seen Gary Barlow's channel where he's got lots of famous people. And there's a Chris Moyle show have put out a Kaiser Chiefs video this week with them singing about being in lockdown. And there's all sorts of good stuff like that going on. So me and our friend Andrea, who works at the Beeb, have done some little songs online as well with me playing the piano and her singing. So if anybody's remotely interested in watching those, you can see those at stu.fm.
Sorry, did you say something?
Thanks for your interest.
You know my love of musicals and music. Yes. And no, it's good that you're doing it. Although I couldn't watch the Evergreen one. That would just send me over the edge. So I didn't watch that. But I'm sure it was great. Don't think I'd survive.
You should watch it if you get a moment, a quiet moment on your own. But there we are. We did a little tribute to John Myers and sung Barbara Streisand's Evergreen. Well, Andrea did it beautifully. So look that up. As I say, I've put the playlist at stu.fm. There's the second plug. Right, let's talk about some radio stuff then. Furloughing going on all over the place across commercial radio at the moment. We're still waiting for news. I'm just refreshing my email as we speak, looking for some news from the BBC about freelancers. And that's due in the next few days as to what support they're going to give them. And we heard from the all-party parliamentary group on commercial radio as well this week that they've put out a warning to the government that they need some help for commercial radio stations and saying some of them could be closing within months if they don't get more help. They want some support with transmission costs. They want the government to spend more on advertising campaigns on the radio with commercial radio as well. So trying times for lots of individuals and companies at the moment.
Yeah, it's all well and good getting help with the employees, and they can furlough them, but it's everything else. It's the costs that don't stop, like you said, the transmission cost, the rent on the building is, you know, a big thing. So yeah, it's going to hit radio hard, and let's hope we can survive on the other side, because the report did say that some radio stations may close as a result of this. So let's hope they don't. Maybe one of the options is to, like Love Sport has done, they can literally pause and then come back once it's all done. So who knows what the outcome of this is going to be, but let's hope it's good.
Yeah, and we talked about community radio a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. Since then, the CMA have said that its member stations can take BBC local radio content from their area. So you've been looking into this a bit, Roy. What does that mean? Does it mean they just put the output on from a BBC local radio station that's near them, or can they use some of their content?
Well, worst case scenario, if you're not very technical, is you can literally fade up the news bulletin at the top of the hour and then fade out again a few minutes later. But there's actually a system being set up on Dropbox where every BBC local radio station in the country is putting their hourly news bulletin, be that 4 or 5 minute long. And as soon as that's finished airing, they're literally chopping it up and putting it in Dropbox. So by 10 past the hour, there's an hourly news bulletin that can be played either then or, you know, on the half hour, or be chopped up and used with credit during the day. So it's good that the BBC locals have done this. It's good that the system's in place. And it bodes for the future, I think. Once this is all done, there's that physical connection between BBC locals and community radio stations. So that can be used in the future going forward for any other projects that come along. So, yeah, it's a good thing.
I know some in the past have kind of on an ad hoc basis, haven't they? Community radio stations got arrangements with BBC local radio stations. But as you say, doing it right across the country is probably going to be a helpful thing for community radio at the moment and potentially going forward as well. It's all obviously publicly paid for content from the license fee. We're going to hear more about BBC local radio in a little bit with Chris Burns on the podcast to tell us about their response to the coronavirus crisis. Some other coronavirus related radio news. Greatest Hits Radio this week has started a new evening show, a kind of late night show, 10 o'clock at night, I think it's called, All Together Now. They're aiming to create a sense of old-fashioned community spirit, presented by Alex Lester and paid for by the Audio Content Fund. Good idea.
Yeah, I had to look twice at this when it came through, because they're effectively just doing a late show on a radio station which already has a late show. The only difference is that Alex Lester is doing it instead of Sean, who normally does the show. I thought the Audio Content Fund was all about specialist shows and documentaries and one-off little, you know, micro features. But this appears to be a radio show that is normally on. So the money for this is being sent in. Bauer aren't getting it. It's the production company that's getting it. Alex will still be paid by Bauer. So it's literally just the production company that's getting paid to make extra production and extra features for a late night radio show hosted by Alex instead of Sean. So a bit weird.
Yeah, it is a bit weird. And as you say, it could be something that Bauer might have just spent their own money on. But this pot of money is here and it's for this kind of thing. So they're saying they're going to feature feel-good stories, life hacks, experts from medicine and fitness and psychology and cookery and all sorts of things like that. It essentially sounds like, you know, an old-style ILR mid-morning show or a BBC local radio show, but on a commercial radio network.
Yeah, and it's targeted at the older people. Now, I don't know how many old people that are awake at 10 o'clock at night and 4 o'clock in the morning. This is something that probably should be on during the day. But yeah, I'm sure there's a reason, and I'm sure somebody will tell us about it after hearing about this.
Yeah, and we've not heard the show yet because we're recording Tuesday night and the first one goes out late tonight. So we will report back, I'm sure. And they've now allocated about £130,000 of this latest Audio Content Fund round for coronavirus-type content. There's going to be a virtual strawberry fair on some commercial and community stations in and around Cambridge, sporting programmes on Fun Kids. Some community stations are teaming up for some programmes made by the over-70s and aimed at the over 70s as well. So there's some nice worthy stuff going on, paid for out of public funding from the Audio Content Fund. And over the weekend there was a load of music stuff that Bauer did as well. So Jazz FM had a virtual jazz festival, there was the Front Room Festival, an absolute Kiss Fest, lockdown sessions on Kerrang and Planet Rock, and Scala Radio sessions live as well. So as you say, it's about the stuff around the radio output, the kind of, you know, the production of it that is coming from this fund. So it, you know, they're all things perhaps that Bauer could have done but might have taken a big investment, and at a time when their advertising money is down, it makes sense to use this public money to do that.
Yeah, let me just mention a couple of things that aren't using public money but are available for radio stations to use. That's Health Information Radio. They've made a website at radiocontent.co.uk, and they have some audio that you can download and play on your radio station. And also our friends at Radio News Hub are creating a 10-minute roundup ready for 7 o'clock every night to be broadcast on any radio station free of charge after 7 at night. And you can find out more by getting in touch with the guys at radionewshub.com. And I have listened to it, and it's really good. It basically tells you what's, you know, rounds everything up from the last 24 hours. So if you fancy that on your radio station, get in touch with the guys at Radio News Hub.
Super. Let's talk about some non-coronavirus news. I know there has been quite a bit of it this week, actually. Small-scale DAB plans move further forward. kind of. We don't know when they're going to start licensing them yet, but Ofcom have said this is our plan.
Yeah, there's going to be quite a few areas. There's 25 areas being advertised first, we presume, at some point in the next, 6 months? They include 5 of the 10 areas that are already licensed on the trial muxes. So that is Cambridge, Glasgow, Birmingham, Bristol, and Norwich. And then obviously 20 other areas which will get advertised first. I don't know how they've chosen them, but I'm sure there's science behind it. They're saying it'll take about 9 months to do the process. So if they start saying 3 months, then a year from now we'll get the first licenses awarded. And then they've got 18 months to get on the air. So worst case scenario, 2.5 years from now, we'll have the first extra mini mux on the air, and the whole thing will take about 5 or 6 years to complete as well. So, you know, speed is not the word here, but at least we're moving forward very slowly.
And we're going to end up with a couple of hundred of these small scale multiplexes as well, I think, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, 8 rounds of 25 stations approximately, so yeah, around 200 by the end of it, assuming they all launch and they don't give up their licenses and there's not more interest. So yeah, and they all originally was going to be DAB plus, or it was suggested that they would only be DAB plus, but now that's not the case. When they finally made the decision, it could be anything, and there's going to be, I think, at least three slots reserved for the community style stations as well.
Okay, we will watch that one with interest over the coming months. As you say, it'll all now depend on the current situation as to when they start off that that licensing round, but I'm sure there are people in certain areas ready to go with their applications. A couple of bits of programming news. Freddie Flintoff, Andrew Flintoff, the cricketer, former cricketer, has joined Talk Sport Breakfast. He'll be on with Laura Woods Monday to Wednesday. Of course, most recently doing some things for Five Live, including a podcast that was very successful. Smooth Chill, as I think it was just on some local multiplexes before, that's now been added to national DAB. So it's available all over the country. And the Hospital Broadcasting Awards, Hospital Broadcasting Association Radio Awards, took place over the Easter weekend. You can see a flavour of some of the winners at radiotoday.co.uk.
And well done to Radio Broccoli, who won Station of the Year.
Radio Broccoli? Is that named after a vegetable?
Yep, it sure is. It's on the same site as Radio Banana.
And moving on, something I haven't listened to yet, but it's on my list of things to listen to over the Easter weekend. Virgin Radio UK put out a tribute program covering the life and career of Pete Mitchell. There were lots of musicians on that and radio colleagues, I think, as well, presented by Chris Evans. So I will have a listen to that at some point. Look it up on the Virgin website and we'll listen to it together. And we're very sad to hear recently of the death of a pioneer of commercial radio, Lord Gordon, Jimmy Gordon, one of the founders of Radio Clyde in the 1970s. He was chief exec of SRH 91 to 96 and then stayed on as its chair for another 9 years or so until the company was sold to EMAP in 2005. So some very sad news that Jimmy Gordon passed away recently. We'd normally talk about events that are coming up, but everything is off at the moment. All the festivals and awards and everything. Obviously, the Hospital Broadcasting Awards happened virtually. I think there is a virtual demo factor that would have been happening as part of the Student Radio Conference. Is that this week?
Yeah, we should be there now. We should be at the Student Radio Conference this week. But that, as you say, has been cancelled for this year. But Radio Days Europe is taking place, so far so good, on the 13th of December in Lisbon. Hopefully we will be there to bring you coverage.
Yes, 13th to the 15th of December, provided we're allowed out of the house by then. Hopefully we will be, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Right, Roy, nice to catch up with you. We will see you again next week. And stick around for David Lloyd's Radio Moments. And also Chris Burns from BBC Local Radio is on the programme next.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. This is the Radio Today programme, and over the last few weeks we've looked at how different bits of the radio industry are coping and covering the coronavirus crisis, including community radio, hospital radio, commercial radio, BBC Network Radio last week as well. This time we're going to find out a bit more about what's going on at BBC Local Radio. Chris Burns is the head of audio and digital for BBC England. It means she's in charge of the 39 local radio stations across the country. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Stuart.
So I've seen some figures, and you're getting, what, 5,000 calls a day, 3,500 text messages a day into BBC Local Radio at the moment. Lots of heartwarming stories as well. So, as usual, BBC Local Radio is shining in a crisis.
Well, I like to think so. I mean, I think the work that staff have done since the start of this crisis has been phenomenal, because they've had to cope with an awful lot of change. As our audience would have noticed, one of the first things we did was we wanted to ensure that we could broadcast locally for as long as possible. And we weren't, when this crisis started, we didn't quite know how we were going to be impacted in terms of staff being unable to work because they were ill or a member of their family was ill. So we decided to standardise the schedule and focus, I suppose, around some of the core principles of local radio, which are around local news, information, and also community. And the Make a Difference initiative was really putting a badge on, if you like, what local radio does in a lot of its output anyway, which is reflect what's going on within communities. And it's acted as a virtual notice board, tapping in, I suppose, to that real desire for localness that has emerged during this crisis, whereby we are able to promote the work that different groups are doing, and we're also able to link individuals with those groups who may need help. And, you know, we've seen since we started and heard since we started some amazing stories that in what can upon occasions feel a very dark period have actually been quite heartwarming and made you think, well, actually, there is good coming out of all of this.
Yeah, and I suppose it's not new for the BBC to be there in a crisis, particularly at a local level. I remember kind of 20 years ago, there was a BBC Connecting in a Crisis document that I was using as part of training. And, you know, that's what BBC Local Radio is there for, whether it's floods or whatever kind of crisis it might be. So presumably you've had plans on the shelf to be able to get things happening quite quickly.
Well, we had plans on the shelf, but of course we'd never had to cope with anything like COVID-19. So as you've just said, you know, local radio has always been fantastic in a crisis. And, you know, if we look at the last sort of 6 months, we've had the floods in Sheffield. We then had the floods across Yorkshire. We then had the floods in Hereford, Worcester, Gloucester, Shropshire. You know, we've had an awful lot of water. But this was completely different, because this was impacting everybody. Our staff are also living this story as well as reporting on this story. And so while we had some ideas of how we might cope, we have had to work very differently. So we have more people working from home. We have more people broadcasting from home. We have fewer people within the office. We've had to use technology in very different ways, so that, for example, our morning meetings will involve home workers as well as those within the office. As I've already said, you know, we had to simplify our schedules because, again, we weren't sure how many people would be able to come in. So although we are, you know, local radio's always been very good at coping with crises, if you like, we haven't ever had to cope with a global pandemic and how local would respond to that. I think what's really interesting is this is a global pandemic, but it's brought home the importance of localness and how localness needs to react. You know, and if I just think about some of the stories I've heard, there was a man in Nottingham who unfortunately was suffering from cancer, and he was risking his health every day by going out to the shops because he had young children. We were able to put him in touch with a group that could do the shopping for him. There was a health worker in, I think it was Devon, who unfortunately their car broke down when they were going on a shift. They were able to get to work, and somebody from their local radio station was able to find someone who was a mechanic who could fix their car so they could carry on working. And we've had literally hundreds and hundreds of stories like that every single day flooding our radio stations. And those are kind of the positive things that have come from this. And indeed, you know, those are the sorts of things that very often happen when we're covering some major weather event in our areas. And I suppose the other thing about local radio, it's often been said, when something like this happens, you know, we're the first on the scene, we live that story, and we're the last to leave that particular scene. And that's what local radio is doing through COVID-19.
And obviously, in terms of the kind of crisis it is, we've got a lot of people who can't leave their homes, you know, people who live on their own, particularly elderly and vulnerable people. Sometimes they're not speaking to anybody for several days or maybe even weeks. So radio stations like those in the BBC Local Radio Network are providing company as well.
Completely. I mean, Radio London, as you know, they have carried on broadcasting through the night. And I was listening, oh, it was a couple of weeks ago now, and there was a woman who came on, and she was probably in her 70s, and she was saying she didn't have a television. Her main company was the radio, and for her, her radio was the link to the rest of the world. And just hearing that voice. And in fact, I was listening to Petri on Radio London this morning, and they'd been discussing loneliness and the number of people who were phoning in talking about how they were coping with loneliness during this particular crisis, and how actually keeping in touch with people virtually was really a kind of lifesaver for them, and the different routines they try to establish for themselves. You know, people who'd taken up gardening and growing things in the gardening in the garden because that was kind of keeping them active, or they were learning something, or they were just kind of, somebody said to me, you know, they were actually, rather than messaging people by text or WhatsApp, they were picking up the phone and having a conversation. So all these things, I think, are being surfaced through the local radio stations, and it's sort of building up that real sense of a virtual community. And the number of times, you know, I've listened to the radio and heard somebody say, I'm really glad you're there, keep on doing what you're doing. And that really makes it all worthwhile.
And in terms of strategy, over the last few months, and well, since you've been in post, you've been bringing in new presenters to BBC Local Radio, perhaps from heritage commercial radio stations in the particular areas. And this is all part of a drive to get your audience age a little bit younger in BBC Local Radio. I wondered whether during the crisis, whether you've learned anything about the audiences you're actually getting and whether it changes how you target your radio stations going forward.
Funny enough, I have never said that we need to target a younger audience in local radio. I think what I have said is I want local radio to have as broad a cross-section of the audience as you possibly can. And what we probably need to do within our radio stations is to create entry points for lighter listeners, if you like, and they may well be younger listeners. And we've done that, I think, through initiatives like, well, it's been there a long time, but you know, BBC Music Introducing is one way of doing that. I think Upload has been another way of doing that. We've also seen some of that come through the new evening strands. And, you know, that is still within our current schedule as well. Some of those voices are there. Another way in which you bring in younger audiences actually is very often through sport, which local radio traditionally does incredibly well, and indeed is still doing some of that. Even though there is no sport, people still want to talk about sport, and we're recognising that within our output. But I think what this has reminded me of, and this has been a cornerstone of local radio since I started, and indeed since it was first launched by Frank Gillard all those years ago, is that it's reminded people of the importance of localness and the importance of community. And I don't think we can underplay how important that sense of community is going to be during this particular crisis, because it brings us together. And when all this is over, you know, I think we want to see things like Make a Difference carry on. You know, I was watching, I think it was BBC Essex did a little video. They did something last Thursday when they had young children dancing on the doorstep to support the NHS and the key workers. And it was a short thing, but it was a lovely thing to see. You know, these young children just dancing with all the care and abandonment, not necessarily any rhythm, but that didn't matter. It was just the kind of their pure joy. But also it was a moment where virtually we were all coming together through those local radio stations.
And I suppose on the audiences, I saw a tweet actually from a BBC local radio presenter earlier who made the point very well that, you know, the idea that stations have to be targeted narrowly is ridiculous, actually a bit old-fashioned, because, you know, you're making radio for people rather than trying to milk a demographic for advertisers like perhaps commercial radio stations are. But David Lloyd had a blog this week, I don't know whether you saw it, and he was pointing out there are 13 million radio listeners in the UK who are in their 60s and 70s, which is obviously a sizable number of people. Presumably, then, your radars are going to be fantastic if we ever get any for this period.
Well, I hope our radars are going to be good. But I think the most important thing to do at the moment is to provide really good, useful information and local news to an audience that need it. And I think... Again, one of the things that we've all learnt, is age now doesn't have the sort of quite the same, you know, binary sense that maybe it had years ago. I was reading the newspapers yesterday, and there were various pictures of Mick Jagger in training for his latest tour, and he's well into his 70s. But he wouldn't necessarily see himself as somebody who's in his 70s. He sees himself as being someone who's very vital and is about to go on a global tour. So I think perhaps some of the impressions we have of what older people are, we need to kind of park and think about actually what's great radio for a local audience and provide the best possible programming we can.
Yeah, I see all the things Mike Sweeney gets up to and it makes me feel old and I'm half his age almost.
Exactly. And I don't think Mike Sweeney would see himself as being old.
And I just want to ask you as well, we've had some concerns sent in to us here at Radio Today from some freelance presenters. Obviously, you talked about the schedule standardisation and there are some people that have lost their local radio shows. Perhaps people who don't have a contract or their contract's coming up soon, and they're telling us they've not been told if they'll ever be back on the air or when they might be back on the air. Is there any help for those people?
Well, the BBC at the moment is doing a lot of work centrally to help support freelancers. And in local radio, we have a variety of different contractual relationships. We will take our lead from whatever the BBC decides to do centrally. The other thing, and I think this is an important thing to stress to freelancers, is, you know, the schedule we currently have is a temporary schedule that's been introduced to cope with a unique set of circumstances. What we're not doing in this schedule is kind of saying, right, that's the schedule that's going to be there for a year and a day. And that's there forevermore. That's not what it's about. This was introduced because we wanted to maintain localness. I know that means that we've lost some of the specialist music programmes that people enjoy. I'm not saying that those specialist music programmes won't come back. At the end of this, we need to kind of pause and we need to kind of think about our schedules and how to serve our audience best. But there are lots of talented people out there who work really well in local radio. They're currently not on air. And I'm really grateful for the work they've done previously. And I look forward to seeing them back on air. In terms of their payments, as I say, we will take our lead from whatever the BBC decides to do centrally.
I suppose the other point that's been made is some of those specialist shows, you know, the nostalgia shows or the brass band shows, those kind of things that different stations have on air. They're kind of regular listens for some of those older listeners who need the company and need the entertainment at the moment. So that being replaced by a news programme or an informative programme might make them go elsewhere for their entertainment.
It might. And one of the things we've tried to do, particularly late at night and in the evenings, is offer programming which has got real companionship. And in fact, I was talking to one of my colleagues earlier on today, and he was saying that Bernie Keith, who's on air on BBC Radio Northampton, you know, he has never known a time when he's had more contact from the audience than he's getting at the moment. So, you know, we are offering, I think, companionship programming where we can. But I do think that the focus for really good local news, information and information about what's going on in my community has to be the prime focus for our stations at the moment.
And finally, a kind of wider point about all this working from home. You know, obviously, you've been somebody who worked in network radio as well. We're seeing national presenters and local presenters all doing programmes from home, from their spare room or wherever. Is this setting something up for the future that actually we're not going to need as an industry as many radio buildings and radio studios because actually people can do it all remotely?
I think it's a really interesting question. And I suspect that we will work in a very different way when things return to normal. I think the, you know, what we don't have when people work from home is quite the same level of broadcast resilience as you would if you were in a building that was purpose-built for that. So there's always a risk there. But certainly I think it's something that we will want to look at. And it could well, you know, revolutionise the way we work in the future. But I think, you know, our focus at the moment is making sure that we are making programmes of the highest quality possible for audiences and also ensuring that all our staff are able to work safely, whether they're working from home or they're working in the office, you know, and focusing down on being local. That needs to be the focus for the moment. And then we'll think about the future when this is over.
Thanks for talking to us, Chris. And thanks for everything all your teams are doing to keep people updated locally during the crisis.
Thank you, Stuart.
That's Chris Burns, Head of Audio and Digital for BBC England, the effective boss of BBC Local Radio. David Lloyd's Radio Moments are still to come. First, a quick reminder about CleanFeed. If you haven't tried it during these lockdown days and you've got a bit of spare time on your hands, now's the time to get it all up and running. It's a great way to connect in studio quality between two remote places. Whether you're doing a podcast or need to get on the air for your radio show, it's fabulous as well in normal times for OBs. It's really simple to use. The quality is great and you can even record within the browser with some of the pro features as well. CleanFeed won't cost you anything to get started. It'll just take 30 seconds to sign up and you'll be doing your first live interview or recording over the internet just via a browser within minutes. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
Because we grew up with radio, it's part of who we are.
Once again from the radio archives, what happened this week in years gone by?
Radio Moments, David Lloyd.
10 years ago this week, the BBC reported that most radio stations in Somalia had stopped playing music on the orders of Islamist insurgents who claimed that songs were un-Islamic. Even jingles disappeared, replaced by sound effects of vehicles, birds and gunfire. Possibly better than some of the UK news jingles we have now, but there we go. Censorship is pretty rare here in a free UK, but 50 years ago this week, an offshore station was jammed by the British government. A naval transmitter was deployed to pump out a tone across the signal of the pirate RNI. I think that's enough of that. RNI itself wasn't very happy.
We would remind the British government that all frequency infringement allegations must be investigated by the Intertelecommunications Union in Geneva. That's the body that controls all European frequencies and prevents nations having to handle complaints with other nations personally. This would have been the legal method of investigating the alleged interference rather than the chosen illegal jamming of Radio Nord Sea, the cost of which the British taxpayer has to provide. No free Western country has ever jammed a free broadcasting station, even in times of war.
As Roger Day said, the catalyst for the jamming was the interference RNI was said to be causing to overseas broadcasters. But later in the year, jamming became more intense as the station changed its name and began to broadcast messages supporting the Conservatives in the June election of 1970.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Wilson, if you think free radio's
now? Listeners protested about the noise, and the Association of Pirate Stations threatened to retaliate by jamming Tony Blackburn's programmes on the BBC.
Fun was in Orino,
It's 30 years this week since commercial radio arrived on the Isle of Wight, originally just on AM. Listen to this.
And broader and brighter the magic flew onward, glancing on hamlet and churches, across gardens and hillocks, until to the island's last limit it came. And there, on the border of boundless waters, I stand rejoicing. For through the magic of Him Almighty, the music dispels all clouds, all darkness. And hovering between heaven and the island, the magic stays.
I like the island to live. It's a much quieter and relaxed place to live, and not so much hustle and bustle as the mainland.
Well, the island to me is home. I was born here, and to me, its attraction is that it's just a little bit out of the rat race. Not isolated.
That's the way to do it. Happy birthday to Isle of Wight Radio, launched this week in 1990. It got its FM transmitter 8 years later. By then, loads of places had commercial radio, unlike this week in 1976, when it looked as though commercial radio's growth had ended. The 19th station in the network was the last one for the time being, launched in Wolverhampton.
Beacon Radio 303, the sunshine sound.
Well, I think the first thing to start with is the music, which obviously is of interest to the vast majority of our listeners. The music on Beacon is going to cover a much wider spread than I think people have been accustomed to on radio generally, in that we are going to split our music into four categories: singles, albums, super gold, or oldies, and breakers. The singles will, to a large extent, reflect national single sales, while at the same time also show the influence of the people who work for Beacon. The albums will be much along the same line. The oldies will obviously reflect the tastes that all of us have had over the years, from 1956 through until about 6 months ago. And the breakers will be a chance for new material, both new material from the area and, of course, from all over the world. A chance for new artists to find out if their type of music will be liked by the listeners to Beacon.
How deep are you going to involve yourself in the local community?
As deeply as the local community give me the chance, because it is very much up to them.
Beacon for Wolverhampton and the Black Country, launching in the sunny days of 1976. From time to time, the BBC has experimented with very small stations, often opting out from their established local stations. This week in 1989, an offshoot of BBC WM.
Across East Birmingham, Heartlands Radio.
That station served East Birmingham for 4 hours a day as an opt-out. It lasted 2 years, but had some pretty nice jingles. Also this week, an opt-out 32 years ago, commandeering just an AM frequency from Radio Bristol.
Good morning to you and welcome along to the very first breakfast show here on BBC Somerset Sound. Coming to you, in part at least, from our studio in Taunton, with a little help from my friends.
Yes, I'm Steve Haig, and I'll be popping up throughout the programme with live reports from our brand new studio in the heart of Yeovil. At the moment, we're getting ready to cut the most unusual birthday cake I've ever seen and heard.
My goodness. And this week at 83, we had an opt-out from BBC Radio Scotland.
Good morning, this is BBC Radio Tweed, broadcasting to the borders on FM frequencies. Welcome to Tweed Report on Friday the 11th of October with Bernard Wilson and Bob Budgers. Today's weather, a dull and misty start to the day, with visibility down to 100 yards in places. And the headlines this morning, Defence Secretary Tom King...
Radio Tweed, and it'll be interesting to see whether the BBC ever does more for smaller communities' hyper-local radio audio, not least because the COVID measures just maybe have helped understanding of how audio can be generated so flexibly. And thinking of that Tweed news jingle brings to mind that this week in the pre-synthesizer days of 1958, the BBC Radiophonic Workshop opened its doors. The The radiophonic workshop was based in the BBC's Maida Vale studios, creating sound, often from very unlikely sources, particularly for BBC drama, stations, sig tunes, themes, jingles. Its birth was thanks to Daphne Oram and Desmond Briscoe. Daphne had begun her BBC work during the war. She was a music balancer, and also there was famously Delia Derbyshire.
If the sound we want exists already in real life, say, we couldn't go and record it. The sound I want for the rhythm of this piece needs to be a very short, dry, hollow wooden sound I can get from this. And then the sound for the punctuating chords, I want the sound of a short wire string being plucked. And then all we have to do is cut the notes the right length. We can join them together on a loop and listen to them.
The BBC's Radiophonic Workshop, opening this week 62 years ago. It closed in 1998. So, with Ed Stewart's last regular show on Radio 2 14 years ago...
Goodbye, folks. Thanks for listening all these years on 88 to 91 FM. This is Radio 2 from the BBC.
Viking, launching to East Yorkshire and North Lincolnshire 36 years ago.
It's my privilege and pleasure to be with you each morning between 7 and 10. And coming up in the next 30 minutes, we'll be looking at the latest travel and traffic news, playing our very first Viking competition, that's Treasure Trail. We'll also be keeping you in the know with all the local happenings, and of course playing some great music as well.
CFM, making its debut in Carlisle 27 years ago.
Good morning. This is John Byers. Welcome to your new local radio station, playing the best mix of music.
The first Help a London Child appeal on Capital 44 years ago, and Capital buying the Century stations 20 years ago. Century. And the first singles chart combining physical release sales with legal downloads 15 years ago.
So it's the only official chart. This is Radio 1's chart show with JK and Joel.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and to Roy, of course, and my guest this week, Chris Burns from BBC Local Radio. And thank you to you for listening. Stay safe, and we'll speak next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassio.